I've been exclusively coaching pairs, almost always the top two in their organizations. Typically, I begin by onboarding them in the sense that the two will retreat with me for a couple days after they've been working together for just a few months or sometimes right from the get-go. I help them align, talk openly about their hopes and concerns, and strategize on how they can bring out each other's best and manage their not-so-best tendencies. They've been teaching me so much about the power of pairs, as well as the art that goes into unlocking that power of two. Three number twos have amazed me. Please note, as my colleague John Gillis reminds me, number two is intended purely as descriptive of a hierarchical structure, while the whole point of leading by two is that the pair treat each other as fundamentally equals, two number ones. All three represent two phenomena. First, a fairly common reality that unfolds in organizations. Second, a rather uncommon form of leadership. I offer them as examples for both phenomena. All three of the amazing number twos happen, that's in quotes, happen to be women. In each case, they were the number two, or in one case, one of the key direct reports of the CEO or executive director, and all had over a decade, one had over 20 years experience at the organization. The number two at their organizations retired, and they each put in for the top job. In each case, they became one of the two finalists, but were passed over in favor of an outsider. Their boards and former number ones lobbied hard to retain them with money, title changes, etc. Oh, did I mention that all three were women? And all three were passed over in favor of men. This is not some open-shut PC sexism case. These three men were and are excellent leaders. I admire them. Each has a visionary and strategic aspect to them, which I'm sure their boards found attractive. Still, the situations are troubling. So often this number two COO type has neither been asked nor even allowed to be visionary and strategic, is placed in a role that demands that they break some eggs inside the organization, and they are then demerited for one thing they weren't asked to do, and for one thing that only they had the courage and discipline to do. This reality, especially as it relates to women, needs to be questioned by every headhunter, board, and succession planning group. The second phenomenon I have witnessed in these three women is what Jim Collins called fifth level leaders in his renowned Good to Great. Collins famously told his researchers, who were looking into companies that made the leap from good to great, that he didn't want them to come back and say it was quote-unquote leadership. He thought that answer was trite, unscientific, subjective. But when he and his researchers found leadership did undeniably matter, they were able to focus in on just what kind of leadership it was, and Collins described these level five leaders as having personal humility, and fierce resolve. That is what I have seen these women bring as I have coached the pairs over the past couple years. After being passed over, they accepted, adjusted, and now continue to advance. There is a dynamic with their partner, for in our onboarding sessions, each of the three men evinced that same personal humility, readily acknowledging their number two's experience, skills, and then actively looking for ways to promote the number two, one of which ways is to openly say to others that she and I are leading together. Four things are most fascinating about this dynamic, and they apply well beyond these top twos, giving insight into how we all relate in so-called vertical or top-down relationships. Number one, these women have fully made the shift to being number two when it is important for the organization. I'm wary of sweeping gender generalizations, but I think women have so much to teach men about this kind of humility. Number two, when and as they are empowered, and this must begin with the boss in such dyads, their voices are fully heard. These three men know there was something arbitrary about their getting the number one job and that the roles could be flipped. Their humility and practice allows these women, number twos, to fully spread their wings, including pushing back very openly with the number one. I would add parenthetically that our clearing the air of the unspoken truth that he got the job she wanted is no small part of generating this open communication. Number three, these three women profoundly understand that there are symbolic roles the top dog plays, and they support this role playing he is involved in. In these organizations, both leaders know both. It's just a role, and it's an important role. Number four, it's as tough, perhaps tougher in many ways, to be number two as it is to be number one. One of the greatest benefits of leading by two is access to a sounding board for ideas and kindness for the soul. I am struck by how these pairs are reciprocally generous. That makes work so much better as they lead with their best self.